Hello, everyone, and welcome to Global Newsmaker Focus. Every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Global Radio Alliance, you will hear guests from a wide spectrum of fields talking about current events and developments that affect our world. Together, let's analyze the latest news and developments on Global Newsmaker Focus. Every Friday night at 8 p.m. And now, I give you your host for Global Newsmaker Focus, Patrice Sheridan.
Welcome, everyone, to this Friday, March 17th edition of Global Newsmaker Focus on KGRA Digital Broadcasting, KGRAradio.com. Happy St. Patrick's Day to our listeners. Tonight's program features guest Andrew Hennessy. Andrew is a Scottish contemporary fiddle player, Cayley dance caller, digital artist, author, researcher, biologist, and tour operator. His website and blog can be found at scottishandrew.wordpress.com. His tour site can be accessed at stargateedinburgh.com. Books by Andrew Hennessy include his latest, Alien Encounters and the Paranormal, The Scottish Experience, with the book link available at Amazon and the show's guest page. His free ebook, The Turning of the Tide, is available at andrewhennessy.co.uk and on the show's guest page. Andrew has also written the paperback, Nook, and ebook, Harvesting the Disconnected, The Alien Agenda for Mankind. I will note some of the guest bio details for the complete and impressive details. Go to Andrew's website and blog at scottishandrew.wordpress.com or the Global Newsmaker Focus guest page. Andrew Hennessy was born in Edinburgh, Scotland. Andrew has been interested in the UFO phenomenon from a very young age. His first book, a free ebook entitled The Turning of the Tide, describes his many encounters and experiences and contains extensive accounts of paranormal and UFO activity reported in Scotland over the centuries. Andrew's most recent book, entitled Alien Encounters and the Paranormal, The Scottish Experience, provides the latest reliable witness accounts and also gives the historical background of paranormal and ufological events in Scotland. Andrew has researched the paranormal and ufology fields for more than 20 years and has written for several publications, including Paranormal Magazine and JAR Magazine, the Journal of Abduction Encounter Research. A professional musician and composer, Andrew's current music projects include his Cayley dance band called The Wild Geese and several recordings for blues and country genre albums on the Scottish scene. As an amateur scientist, he has also conceptualized new scientific advances, for example, artificial general intelligence, a new model for gravity, cosmology, and particle physics, a new kind of game theory, and a new kind of systems theory. He was listed on the dissident scientist list by the Jean de Clément Associates in 2012, 2014, 2016. Andrew, in 1999, founded the New Star Party to promote a frank dialogue with exopolitics to include discussion of alleged human rights violations. In 2007, Andrew founded Xenopolitics to illustrate the negative and often demonic nature of alien contact. On this subject, Andrew authored the paperback and ebook entitled Harvesting the Disconnected, The Alien Agenda for Mankind. Andrew also originated the disclosure about the window area, high strangeness, and possible alien base in the Gore Bridge area in Scotland from 1999. Andrew operates a UFO, paranormal, and Illuminati tour in his native Scotland with website stargateedinburgh.com. The Scottish Andrew Group of Companies website can be found at scottishandrew.com. Andrew, thanks for joining us this evening, where it is shortly after 11 p.m. in Scotland.
Good evening and happy St. Patrick's Day, 17th of March.
Yes, indeed. And I appreciate that. Andrew, lest I forget to mention this important development, you're scheduled as a speaker at the Scottish UFO and Paranormal Conference 2017 to be held Saturday, July 8th at the Falkirk Town Hall. Your talk will be on the high strangeness in Gorebridge. Andrew, can we talk about some of the exciting developments, photos, and witness testimonies on Gorebridge and the interest it receives from various individuals and groups?
Aye, well, Gorebridge is a ex-mining town, ex-coal mining town, about 15 miles south of Edinburgh. And all the coal mines closed in 1981. But there does seem to be some tie-in with strange and very alien activity in that area, perhaps using the old mines, for example. But I think they've been there a lot longer than the coal mines. You know, there's. I think if you look at the evidence on show, it's so bizarre. There is stuff happening in Gorebridge every night, every day and every night. You go there in the daytime, you'll film some extraordinary stuff. Now, a lot of the stuff I've got, of course, is on my YouTube, on the Outshore channel. I've already got quite a few YouTubes. You can see some very strange stuff parked up in the fields, alien hardware flying about, small alien hardware flying about in the trees, some of it the size of a washing machine, some of it smaller. You can see black triangles over flying. You'll see the other witness to this, film camera and John Jackie Gillies, has actually filmed quite a lot of stuff from about 1999. He's got an extensive archive of footage, so much UFO footage that he doesn't know what to do with it. He's got carrier bags full of, originally were tapes, now that's SD cards, and it's got a huge archive, and it's pretty much everything he's got is bizarre stuff. The extraordinary only thing about us, though, is we've tried to get this stuff analysed by experts. There was one UFO group early on, I think around the year 2000 or something, we sent off with this master tape to get it analysed. Because at that point, we were thinking, well, let's get the scientists involved and let's get them in there. And now we'll really sort things out because we've got a scientific perspective. So we sent off them stupidly. I mean, I sent off the only copy of the master tape to this UFO group, who then sent it off to scientists in inverted commas to get analysed. So, great. It comes back. Our only copy of this master tape comes back with a copy of the UK soap opera called EastEnders taped over it, completely wiped out. So, yeah, and the other issues surrounding there is that you'll find that, I mean, from my own point of view, if I leave my hard drive exposed to the powers that be, if I go to bed and forget to switch off this machine, they'll have come back and they'll have reshuffled my archive, making folders within folders within folders of ballast of particularly nothing very much. I had 1 gigabyte of a photograph of this guy called, well, we'll call him Dangerous Dave because he gets into all these strange UFO in situations. I had 1 folder in my computer and I've lost about 1 gigabyte of certain sorts of files, 1 gigabyte of highly evidential files of about, you know, 4 megabytes, 6 megabytes max, some of these files, 6 megabyte JPEGs, 1 gigabyte. I mean, that's a lot of image information. Luckily, I mean, I've got most of it backed up, but for goodness sake, you know, they really do seem to take it seriously, the cover-up side of things anyway.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I would agree with you.
Yeah.
Well, now, Andrew, you have 3 CDs and a new DVD out on Gorebridge. Again, the video is entitled High Strangeness in Gorebridge. It has remarkable images, and can I assume that some of this footage is that taken by John Jack Gillies regarding Gorebridge and the surrounding area?
No, actually, it's all my own kind of stuff. This is all the stuff that I've taken. I thought that...
excuse me. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I mean, people needed to sort of see... it's quite a lot of my stuff. I mean, quite a lot of my original photographs have been eliminated, shall we say, but I've actually got photographs of Spielberg-like aliens, winged Draco, or reptilian beings, short greys. I've got pictures of the technology they use. They use these stealth cone-shaped tents, like bivouacs that they put over themselves, and they kind of reflect the light. But in a certain time of the day, say in the twilight, the sun will shine through and reflect, and you'll be able to see these stealth tents that they've got. They're all shapes and sizes, these stealth tents. I've got one of these things that's trying to cover a UFO, a big tent about, you know, hundreds of yards big. And they've got them for the little greys hiding these things. And they're about, you know, 3 or 4 foot. But, you know, from 100 foot to 4 foot, they seem to have this kind of technology, which you suspect that they would be handing it over to somebody to use. I don't think it's, frankly, I mean, we've actually got images of the greys hiding their black triangles on a hilltop. And you see on the hilltop the setting sun going down behind it, and the setting sun's rays lighting up this black triangle sitting on the crest of a hill. I mean, it's interesting stuff. I mean, one of the things on this DVD you're going to find is the pictures of what I think can only be interdimensional hardware. The area I've been filming is like a kind of starport. Almost. They look like common garden farming fields behind Gorebridge. Just farming fields. What could go wrong? I mean, you've got UAVs surveilling the local trees there. You've got UFOs parked in the fields. You've got, and at night, the locals see these fields light up. And you've got these massive, big container-like structures coming up in an ethereal way, coming up through the fields from the mines below and floating off and all this kind of stuff. Because some extraordinary stuff, interdimensional craft as well, something that looks like a lunar module with a big cotton bud on the end of it. It's an interdimensional kind of craft, you know, stuff you wouldn't expect to see flying about, certainly. It just looks very bizarre. It's got probably to do with frequencies and force fields and things. Some very strange equipment in those fields. And I've got some pictures of that as well on this DVD.
Excellent. Well, you know, you're definitely discussing very unusual sightings and reports of anomalous craft and beings. Now, Andrew, could you tell us about Gorebridge Castle and its fame as far as ghosts and UFO events?
Well, I think Gorebridge Castle as Borthwick Castle is, I think that's the same thing, what you're saying. Borthwick Castle is quite near Gorebridge, and it's a twin keep. It was blasted by Oliver Cromwell when Cromwell came up in 1650 to sort the Scots out. He blew it up with cannon. It was restored. It became a place used by the Ministry of Defence in World War II to store all the secret stuff what to do with Scottish records and things. But that its history of ghosts is that it is there's this room in it called the Red Room, I think as a hotel these days, it became a hotel, and you could probably come and stay in the Red Room if you want, but apparently this serving maid got pregnant, and the aristocratic laird at the time decided to do away with her and her child, and she was held down, and a soldier killed her with a sword or something like that, and the baby, and the room's supposed to be haunted by this servant called Anne Grant, who a very unhappy lady. But, you know, this is typical of Scottish history of these castles. It's full of blood, sweat, tears, betrayal, murder, horror stories and all that. The thing that ties Borthwick Castle to its neighbouring Crichton Castle is this valley called Curry Wood. Now, Curry Wood is owned by the National Trust for Scotland, and it's kept in its natural state. So it looks like it's quite wild-looking valley. And in this valley, sometimes people go camping and they'll complain about something growling and shuffling around their tent at night and things like that, which is interesting because that area has got connections to skinwalkers and things as well. There's all sorts of archaeological evidence being seen from this too, which we can go into later on, I suppose. But Curry Wood, which connects Crichton Castle, is very haunted. I've got pictures of greys or heart-shaped head Spielberg-like aliens sitting in these little four-foot-high stealth tents in that with the kind of glowing yellow technology. stuff. So the, it does seem to be the back door to the alien base at Gore Ridge. That. So interesting enough, you'll see on a night of the full moon, you'll see a bunch of bikers all coming, sort of Hell's Angels go and have a party in that wood and all that sort of stuff. Why, I'm not quite sure, but there you go. It must be quite a buzz if you're partying beside some aliens. I don't know why they're sleeping overnight there as well. Goodness gracious. Anyway, so Hell's Angels go and party in there and then they make the full moon. Strange stuff.
Interesting details indeed. And now, regarding your Scottish tours, now, Andrew, would you have a combined tour there to Creighton Castle, Borthwick Castle, and the intervening or connecting Colley Wood, valley?
Currywood. Currywood.
Thank you, Currywood. Would you have one mega tour, or are there three separate tours? It sounds like really a tour worth taking.
What we'd do is come and get you. If you ever come into Edinburgh, I'll come and take you out there. Take you out to Creighton Castle first of all, and then they can see Creighton Castle from various angles. And then if you're disposed to walking the valley between, which the locals, by the way, call this Valley Dinosaur Valley, believe it or not. The locals have a nickname for Currywood. They call it Dinosaur Valley because of all the big cattle bones lying about, probably in a raw and semi-chewed state. Because, I don't know, maybe they're feeding the watchdog or something. I don't know exactly what the werewolf stories are justified. I don't know. But anyway, you could take a walk between, that's about a mile or two, between Creighton Castle, haunted Creighton Castle, and haunted Borthwick Castle. And in that haunted wood as well. I think the haunted wood's more going to potentially more problematic for you than the two castles, actually.
Thank you very much for that information. On the cattle abductions, indeed, reported cattle abduction by anomalous craft and beings has definitely been reported here in the United States. I will be talking about the skinwalkers. That's a fascinating topic. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to mention again how iconic that report was of the 2008 event at Birkenside, that village at the south end of Gore Bridge, where John Gillies that night witnessed an unusual strobing blue light, which lights came inside his home.
Mm-hmm. Now, the thing that John Gillies has been plagued by this phenomenon, and his family too, his wife was involved in an abduction called Dalhousie Castle, very locally as well, but that he's been plagued by this phenomenon, but seems to think that these beings are his friends. And that's John's interpretation of it. Certainly, I mean, it could be that they try and get an angle on them. They haven't done them any real harm at the moment, hopefully. So, but they seem to like to. They got in his house, they smashed his glass coffee table into a thousand smithereens and made the glass writhe about on the floor like a snake. They've picked up his Rottweiler by the neck by an invisible arm and left it dangling inside the house and all this kind of thing. And he's got pictures of these things prancing about and big prancing about on his roof as well. It's not necessarily the most happy. He's had Men in Black encounters as well. And he's also had harassment from an alien figure, which I might have told you about already, called Colonel Joe. He's some kind of alien security figure, which, you know, maybe the aliens are interested in the number of people that are making life difficult for them by reporting their activity at Goldbridge. I don't know, but he got these phone calls from this gentleman who said he was Colonel Joe of alien security. This isn't, of course, the same as the British security, which is Defence Intelligence 55. This is an alien being, a man in black, has taken on the human role and used human landlines to phone up John Gillies to get him to go on a walk so he could round him up. And what he did was he intercepted John Gillies somewhere near this Camp Hill where we've been talking about, where all the phenomenon takes place. And he gets out his black Bentley. He's a tall, elderly gentleman in a grey tweed suit. Yeah, these are authority, the garb of authority in the UK as a kind of person in the tweed suit, you know, a well-educated academic sort of thing, or, you know, this kind of thing. Authority figure. Anyway, gets out this black vehicle, a black old classic vehicle, puts a bit of technology on the hood of his car, the front of his car, bonnet of his car, and then says, don't worry, this is going to screen all surveillance and all. Proceeds to tell John Gillies that he's a 1 in 10. I don't know if it's maybe the aliens do take the mic, and they have a way of sarcastically taking the mickey of people. A 1 in 10. There was in the UK, there was this band in the UK called UB40, which is based on signing on, and they said that 1 in 10 people in Scotland sign on. Now Jackie doesn't have a job at the moment, not because he doesn't want to work, because he's got a very bad injury to his back. But anyway, he's a 1 in 10, and he gets out these maps, 1950s like maps of the area, and shows him basically nothing. Just there, intimidating. When I heard about this, I drove my car up. I drove up to the camp, and I saw this Colonel Joe character, and we passed. I slowed down. He slowed down, and we passed each other slowly, looking into each other's car, eyeballing each other on the way past, you know, Colonel. So I did see the Colonel Joe figure, but these are just holograms, I think. They're not actually real people. And, I think that John Gillies has had a hard time from these creatures. And who knows, he might yet see an awful lot more. He's been filming all sorts of stuff every day and every night. As I say, he's got a massive archive now.
Great information there. Now, Andrew, your other 2017 CD material is the three respective CDs. First, that on the mystery of Stargate Edinburgh. The second, A Farewell to Dawn. And the third, Aeon, I believe it is. Now, Andrew, I want to first discuss the CD to be released this July, The Mystery of Stargate Edinburgh. Now, does this pertain to the fact that you've noted that there is an alleged operational Stargate used by the ancient residents in the fields near the Limeworks and its cavern system? Is that in the Edinburgh area?
Well, that's just one portal of probably a lot more than that. I mean, that particular Stargate was witnessed by, or portal was witnessed by John Gillies out filming one night. I don't think he actually filmed that stuff. I don't think he wanted to interfere with these beings as they were on the way through this. It was a blue kind of hairpin loop. It was glowing, but its actual blue glow never cast any shadows amongst the vegetation and stuff. So I don't know what dimension this particular phenomenon was in. But that's just one. That's at middle. That's very near this castle called Borthwick and Crichton Castle that we've been discussing. It's very near there, and Gorebridge too. So, but no, the Edinburgh area has got an incredible amount of UFO stuff happening there. It is a window area. There is stuff going on there. It's one of the world's busiest UFO hotspots, the Falkirk Triangle. That whole area there is, for some reason, just night and day stuff going on. And we have had, I must admit, there have been attempts to debunk us. I mean, One of the best debunk jobs from counterintelligence I've ever seen was the Mentorn TV production, Have Aliens Invaded Scotland, where they had an opportunity to present all the best evidence we had, but they chose to pick up on aircraft landing lights, because there's an airport around there as well, and they'll say, well, it's the airport landing lights. All the people in Scotland are just out of work, looking to make some money or something, and this kind of thing. So that's what they were trying to do. So, but anyway, yes, there is stuff going in the Falkirk Triangle. It's the busiest UFO window area on the planet, I think.
Boy, that's very intriguing. That I did not know. That's interesting new information. Now, Andrew, let's next discuss your 2017 CD entitled A Farewell to Dawn, The Epic Story of the Celts, or Celts, From the Dawn of Time to the Oceans of Space. And Andrew, as is widely known, March 17th today is celebrated as St. Patrick's Day. I've noted you mention in your research and writings the Tuatha De Danann in your work. Do the Irish and Scottish share that link? What are some of the details on these shared features and accounts?
Right. Now, first of all, A Farewell to Dawn was written by myself many moons ago now. And one of the It's epic verse. It's sort of got sort of two. It was Sarah and Dawn did the narration, and there's music and all songs. It's a lovely, lovely piece. It's got me playing fiddle as well. But anyway, one of the pieces about the Celts and their journey from Egypt, and you know, and also their dispersion. It goes, and now our kin, their only sin, a need for loaf of bread, have by tyrants been betrayed. An ocean is their bed. Those slaves who lived through transportation have in time prepared a nation, though an Isle of Mist is in their mind and parted from their parent kind. Some to cities, grimy mills, others dying in the hills of a distant land, etc., etc. So this is, and then this is done, of course, by a lady, theatrical narrator that's much better at doing it than I am. But anyway, this thing about the Tuatha De Danann, though, is slightly different. I mean, if the Celts are linked in some way to the Tuatha De Danann, it's through their descent, not particularly because they are. I mean, the Tuatha De Danann were supposed to be the Sumerian Anunnaki, because the Danann, the people of Anu, Danu, Anu, D A N U, A N U, all these people are the reptiles, basically. You know, reptilian. Some might say fallen angels, devils, whatever, and that they reached the shores of Ireland according to the Book of Invasions, and there they kind of begot, as it were, and they've got these men of renown. These in Ireland, they were known. Some of them were known as the Firbolg Knights, Firbolg. They were giants, and they were involved in battles and things. Interesting that in America, all the stories of giants have been well and truly eliminated by the Smithsonian Institute. I think that just in the course of life in Scotland, stories like this tend to disappear as well. And it's quite interesting that there could well have been some kind of cultural conspiracy to eliminate our Scottish and Celtic roots and all this kind of stuff. But that's just maybe my opinion about that. But I think these stories are getting harder and harder to find, actually, in Scotland today.
Indeed, and I must say that, again, those details are very enlightening. Now, your 2017 CD entitled Aeon is your Star Wars space fairy tale about a pilgrimage to save the Earth. Now, Andrew, you indicated that subsequently you've decided that the conclusion should have more of a Christian ending. Details on this?
Well, you know, in the days of around about the year, that was written in 1990, to be honest with you. 1990 is a long time, only 30 years ago. And around about the year 2000, I could be found at a UFO conference saying, oh, the Greys, the aliens, our Star Brothers, let's give them a chance. They could do us all sorts of wonderful good and all that stuff. Let's cooperate. Let's do stuff with the Greys. And maybe, you know, I've got a take on myself saying that, you know. Can't believe it. Anyway, but that was before I got head-on, full-on. They really went for me big time. They really did. And I write about these weird, bizarre, strange encounters in my free ebook, The Turning of the Tide, which you can find on our website, any one of those. Like, if you go to newstarparty.com, you'll find a link to The Turning of the Tide, about my own encounters in Scotland. And that also, it turned my perceptions of these beings from just being possibly not just neutral, but overtly hostile soul miners, after I agree with Nigel Kerner in his Song of the Greys book, that they really are after our souls. And that really all ties into the folklore anyway. Now, Aeon is a great story. It's an optimistic story. If anything, Aeon is a lovely fairy story from a youth-filled perspective, that maybe Tinkerbell will come and save our planet at the end of it all. Maybe Tinkerbell will, but I don't think Tinkerbell's going to come and save our planet. What do you think? I mean, Tinkerbell, the magic fairy, has got a long history of leaving us up the creek without a paddle, to be honest with you. Historically, if you look at the folk record in Scotland of all the malignant abductions by fairies, or if you follow Islam, they're called jinn. You know, these jinn have got absolutely no love for humanity as we understand it, and they want to eliminate us, there's no doubt. So I think if I was going to make it a Christian ending, it would be maybe Mother Mary or something like that, or an Angel Michael. We might be the Archangel Michael or some female saint that came in and saved us at the end of it, because I think that's our best hope, really, not these soul-eating fairy things. But that was just, you know, so the fairy tale thing, Eowyn, it's a lovely story, beautifully, it's an operatic singer singing some of the songs, and lovely actors, they did a great job of the story, but I just wouldn't make... It wouldn't be the Queen of the Fairies that come and saved us at the end of the day, is all I'm saying there.
You know, that's really quite an interesting update on that, and an analysis over time. Very intriguing. Now, Andrew, am I correct then that you found a definite connection between the reports of fairies and aliens?
Yeah, there is. If you look into the old folklore records of the Reverend Robert Kirk. The Reverend Robert Kirk in 1697 wrote this book called The Secret Commonwealth of Elves, Fauns and Fairies in 1697. And in that book, you'll find reference to the fairies. The big story behind Reverend Robert Kirk, we'll not go into that just yet, but in the book, you'll find reference to the Reverend Robert Kirk discovering that the fairies drank essence through their pores, the pores of the skin. So they absorb essence through the pores of the skin. Now, interestingly, there is a tie-in between that and the Gary Wood A70 abduction in Scotland, the famous A70 abduction with Colin Wright and Gary Wood. And Gary Wood in that said that when he was taken on board this spaceship, where the pair of them were lifted off the road near this Harper Rigg Reservoir on the road from Edinburgh to Tarbrax, about 15 miles out of Edinburgh, they were lifted up into this ship, got 2 hours of missing time, and a lot. I'll tell you about that abduction. A lot of things happened in that abduction that took a lot more than 2 hours. So there's a time dimensional phenomenon took place there as well. But in the middle of this, though, Gary Wood is sitting in this metallic room, and there's some poor naked lady in there, trembling and terrified, and he's in this room. He's kind of naked as well, and he's this technology surveilling him in this room, this metallic room, probably in the spaceship. We don't really know where it was, to be honest with you. And he said that he could see these glass jars full of green fluid, and in them was this grey being. And it seemed to be, he just knew it was in there feeding and excreting as well. Because he said that they had these engineered metallic, like tapeworm things that would take the waste from the water. Interesting detail that this engineered stuff floating about in this green goo to clean it up. So it was a kind of feeding tube for the greys would climb into that, and it climbed out. And there's a grey, a fairy or whatever, feeding through its pores in from green goo. In this glass tube. So there is a connection, a folklore connection from 1697 to, what was it, Gary Wood? It was 1992, wasn't it? I can't remember exactly. 1992, I think. But, you know, there is a connection, definitely, between the apparent physiology of these beings.
Yes, pardon my interruption. Yes, apparently some similar details there. Now, Andrew, could you please tell me of your research and Scottish tour on Borthwick Castle and the Skinwalkers? And listeners, we have Andrew Hennessy's YouTube video on Borthwick Castle and the Skinwalkers posted at the guest webpage at globalnewsmakerfocus.com as well. Could you tell us about this, Andrew, please?
Right. Well, first of all, the story of the Skinwalker. Now, the Skinwalker story that I have was researched by Gary Wood, this abductee. Since he was abducted, he then decided he was going to get into this stuff, and he went. He's a very credible guy, Gary Wood. He's very camera shy as well. Hollywood tried to get him to make a Fire in the Sky type Walton kind of thing. He backed out of that. But anyway, he should have taken him up on it, but never mind. Anyway, Gary Wood, he went after these people, these workmen that had gone to this warehouse in Poulton Mill. Now, Poulton Mill is nearer Rosland than it is nearer Borthwick, but the principle is, the connection is all these river valleys and things like that. We'll get to that in a moment, because they might seem to move up and down these river valleys as their means of transport, or, you know, routes, rather than loping down the local road looking very hairy and wolf-like, they probably stick to the cover, natural cover in these valleys. Anyway, the Coulter Mill werewolf story is Night of the Full Moon. It was a Sunday night. These three painters and decorators had a job on Monday morning, and they decided that they were going to go to the paint warehouse at Bolton Mill. And they got there on Sunday night to get their stuff, to put the paint and all that stuff for the next day. So they pulled in, they opened the metal gate. The gate goes open and they drive in, and they see this figure on top of the warehouse roof. And they think to themselves, oh, that's got to be the night watchman. They say to themselves, that has to be the night watchman because he's up there doing some roof repairs or something. So they're getting closer, Carson Clegg, and say, oh, that's not. Suddenly, this night watchman or whatever it is jumps off the roof and lands in the yard in front of them on its 2 feet, as it were. It's a hairy werewolf. It's snarling. It chases them out of the air. They then hit the car in reverse, as you do, and then reverse hit the gates and drove off hysterically with a single open after them. So the thing is that there's an open police report actually still on that, because the actual night watchman that was on duty that evening vanished and never returned. So we don't know if the werewolf got the night watchman or the night watchman was the werewolf. Either way, there's an open police report on a missing night watchman. However, these guys, they kind of took nervous breakdowns, as you'd expect, because that would have been a life-changing event for them to see something like that come after them. But the connection is actually these river valleys, because there's all these black dog stories about the North Esk River that flows past Roslyn Castle and Chapel. And there's a black dog stories about that. There's a black dog stories of something panning about at Strayton as well, which is very near Roslyn. Stories of black dogs with red eyes and things, and just in that area, just in that river valley connecting. It's about 10 miles separation between Roslyn and Borthwick Castle, but the stories are quite similar. You get these underground stone-lined chambers that have been discovered. I mean, two have been discovered. One's been discovered near Borthwick Castle, in this valley, where people are complaining about being harassed at night by growling stuff and skinwalkers and stuff like that. They're being harassed at night. Thankfully, not assaulted, because they could have been. But anyway, you get the story of these underground chambers and the rough stone. And references to these can be found in the Society of Antiquaries Transactions in Edinburgh. And I think in the 20s or 30s, yeah, I haven't got the specific antiquaries transaction for that, unfortunately, but it can be found. If I had to, I'd go dig it up again. But there's one at Borthwick, and there's another one was discovered above Dalkeith near Edinburgh, but again, that's on a river valley as well. So skinwalkers, there is stuff happening in that area, there's no doubt, and I could be that these lycanthropes or skinwalkers are just simply more phenomenon to keep people scared and indoors when certain other things are going on, like alien ships are flying overhead and lifting up cattle in full view of the locals and things like that. And it might be that this is all part of the kind of watchdogs to keep people indoors kind of thing. Might be that, or it might be that there is actually a long history of a family of skinwalkers in that area, a tribe of skinwalkers, who knows? I mean, there could well be, given the actual underground drawings that have been found for these creatures. Could be a lot more going on there than we've yet discovered.
Those are very interesting arguments there, Andrew. Also, I remember seeing in the material that you believe Warford Castle, the reports that indeed Warford Castle has very famous caverns, and some of the evidence there of hand marks don't seem to be quite human.
Warford Castle, that's either... I think you could be referring to, there's a castle, I mean, most of the castles around there are connected with caverns. Edinburgh Castle is the main city.
I could have misheard. I know that in your other research, one of your books, you mentioned interesting caverns in the Edinburgh city area itself.
City of Edinburgh, underground, central, but nearer the Borthwick Warford. Wallyford.
W-A-R-F-O-R-D. I think it's probably, pardon my pronunciation.
No, unfortunately. I don't think there may be a Warford Castle near Waterford in England, but I don't think there's. I think it's okay. Yester Castle is Gifford, the Goblin Halls. There's a place called Goblin Halls Castle, which is built by a warlock, Hugh de Gifford. And apparently, like, he used elemental forces to construct it and things like that. It's quite a lot of stories of, Scottish wizards and things like that.
Indeed.
They seem to be tied up with this kind of phenomenon, don't they? I think we're going to discuss another Scottish wizard later on, but there are these cavern systems. They are connected with elemental creatures like the Greys. These Greys are not, as far as I can make out, these Greys are not from a star system called the Zeta Reticuli. No, I think they're just kind of like an interdimensional hive or locusts, so they don't necessarily have any home planet. They more have a home plane or dimension, I think. I guess they're more likely.
I find it very intriguing, too. You're linking the Greys to the elementals. Very interesting there.
Yes. Yes, they are.
No, I have a really exciting point I want to make about a really very anomalous photo. But before we do, I just wanted to mention, too, your great research on Fife. And do I pronounce it Dineno Woods? Also in that Dineno area, Woods. The stones left by the Picts.
Uh-huh. Well, standing stones. I mean, Fife is full. I mean, Scotland, to be honest, is full of standing stones. Then no doubt there was a great deal of worship of Baal, which is, a kind of fertility worship, sun worship, all that sort of stuff. The worship of the cycles, necessary death. Unfortunately, somebody's got to necessarily die if you're into that stuff, so that things could be necessarily reborn. Scotland was into its sacrifices, there was no doubt, but still very sacrificially maintained the police structure that, unfortunately, you could find evidence of that if you really wanted to. The thing is that these ancient stones could well have been put there by beings that weren't human, I suspect. In some of the ancient sites, you see these stone balls have been found. Now, in the National Museum, these stone balls look like grapefruits or tennis balls or small pineapples. They look knobby, granular, sort of narrow-looking pineapple things. They actually, to my mind, look like pollen grains. Actually, Scots pine pollen grains, grass pollen grains, they look like models of pollen grains, actually, is what they look like to me. But they are, interestingly, although the National Museum and the establishment is never going to admit that they were pollen grains, because how could human beings possibly have the microscopes to see these things, let alone make models of them, etc., because we're all supposed to be living in mud huts and stuff. But there was stuff going on in these ancient times which were clearly got nothing to do with human beings. Now, the museum labels them as fertility artifacts. That's very interesting, because if they are pollen grains, they most definitely are fertility artifacts. Now, what would an ancient reptilian being do with a model of a pollen grain? Question is, would they be using voodoo to draw from the power of the land by sympathetic resonance? At the time the vernal equinox, say, when all the growing season starts, does one of these reptilian shapeshifters walk into the stone circle, hold up one of these pollen grain things and start to pull in some vegetational power to itself? Good question. So that's my question. Anyway, so there was stuff going on. And the other issue, because we haven't really dwelt that much on the Tuatha De Danann, these reptilians, the other issue is that they had prowess in battle, didn't they? I mean, Enter the Dragon, we know the Chinese kind of draconian people could do extraordinary feats of Enter the Dragon. And it's a very well-known martial arts movie. But if you think about it, in Scotland, the local humans in Scotland painted themselves blue after the Blue Men of the Minch. The Blue Men of the Minch were the Draco or the reptilians, and the local human beings would paint themselves blue with wood, probably to try and draw some of this godlike prowess in battle that these draconian beings were exhibiting. So it's very interesting. All this, the standing stone culture in Scotland is still very much upheld. And There's an unfortunate side to this, as far as I can make out. But I've been told by some druid that I just don't understand these things. So I asked them about blood sacrifices. I just don't understand these. I'm glad I don't understand these things. I'd never want to understand these things. No.
Well, you know, I think it's so intriguing, too, that your research, and also now you've further mentioned that the reptilians, indeed, many believe can be described as skinwalkers, shapeshifters, the skinwalkers, as well as the werewolf types and others. Very intriguing information. Now, Andrew, let's discuss this photo. Reviewing your material, I did note an extremely anomalous photo. You mentioned that it's part of the footage taken by John Gillies over Gore Bridge. It's described as a spinning ship. And now, Andrew, you think that it could be an example of a craft, a ship that has or is a TRE design, tree design for tripartite essentialism. And Andrew, please tell us of your concept and forthcoming book on the theory of threeness, tripartite essentialism, the fundamentals of interstellar society.
Right. Well, right, so we've got a couple of minutes in. That's good.
Yes, we do.
First off, I mean, this spinning ship, if you can think, if you can visualize of a half a bunch of bananas, think of a half a bunch of bananas and they're spinning around. That's what this ship looks like. It looks like a half bunch of bananas. The person that thought it was shape-shifting and teleporting and mutating physically, it was a gentleman called Frank Ferguson. His father worked for, he was a chief scientist at Lockheed Skunk Works. And they were into the American Deep Space Platform, which was kind of interstellar Stargate teleportation and stuff like that. So he really thought that actually, he thinks that my TRE stuff is quite similar to what his father was working on. Father was a very famous radar scientist as well, but he had a team of 50 PhDs working for him. From all sorts of corporations, Lockheed, Boeing, American Naval Research, stuff like that. So he was a head honcho for a while. I think he fell out of favor because he wasn't willing to work on some sort of guidance system with the Greys or something. I can't remember. It was some issue that he fell out with him. But that's another story. But this ship has been seen over Gore Bridge many, many different times. And it was from, I think the initial stuff was from 2008. It was seen over a period of months. It kept coming back. It still is seen there in that area. Again, a whole bunch of them. There's several of them together, you know, and they're all like a patrol. Now, John Gillies has got footage of one of those things on fire with smoke coming from it, heading north and descending, like it was going to crash somewhere, like it had been in some sort of battle as well. So, and we reported that, of course, to all the usual suspects, like Nick Pope, old Nick Pope, as we call him. So Nick Pope, he said it was just space junk. Well, technically it was space junk at that point because it had just been shot up. It wasn't going to fly anymore. So I suppose he was really being truthful in his own way. But anyway, yes, these things are happening on a frequent basis. What you're looking at, if you're looking at that animated GIF, you're seeing, think of the bunch of bananas. You see from the front, it looked quite phallic from the front. It's like a six-sided from the front, that. As I say, it's very Gnostic, phallic. You know, if you think of the Kabbalah, six is the male number. And from the side, it looks like the eight. It looks like the female number. The eight, very arachnid and spider-like from the side. So that's eight from the side. Six from the front is what it looks like. I just thought that looked very... I mean, the only people that are into this dichotomy of left brain and right brain and the Kabbalah like that are the reptilians. So I thought it was a reptilian starship of some sort. That's what I thought. And now this TRE stuff that I'm into, it's taken me 30 years. You say that's a long time, Andrew. You spent an awful long time on 30 years doing tripartite essentialism, the theory of threeness. But just basically, in the moments we've got left anyway, if you think to yourself, the human being is automatically configured to think in terms of three. Now, just as one example, because we haven't got time to go into it, is if think of past, present, and future, our consciousness, our common sense, everything about our consciousness is is aware of the past, the present, and the future. But from there, you could develop all sorts of other things. Now, this theory I've got is a particle physics as well, because it's a metaphysics and it's a physics. The physical theory draws from chaos theory, and it'll verify Nikola Tesla's stuff, no doubt. And the other stuff, the metaphysics, is programmable. You could make artificial intelligence with it as well, robots. And would you want to make robots with that? Can you imagine giving them this stuff? You know, sentient robots, guess what they'd do with it? I'll be back and all that stuff. No thanks. But anyway, I'm putting it as a book, just as a general release, and I've kind of stayed away from making it too sentient robot-wise for everybody, because that wouldn't be fair on us. Because I don't think the human race is going to get the benefit of any of this stuff at this point. So,
And it will be published this summer or autumn, correct?
Well, I'm going to be running it by my. You see, I was very lucky in getting married to my wife Robin, because she's a PhD in logic and metaphysics. So
wonderful.
I'm very lucky about that. But it was total luck. Anyway, so providence, that's the word. And love, of course. Love and providence is. Anyway, she's going to look through it and she'll give it an academic run over to make sure it's sentient, you know, from that point of view.
Wonderful. And now we have about 2.5 minutes left. Just very quickly, Andrew, I also had seen an excellent YouTube video regarding Michael Scott, that 11th and 12th century knight, traveling scholar, mathematician, and mage. You also include super footage of Balwearie Castle, the tower in Fife, where he and his family were reported to have lived. Do you have a tour there? Any comments? It was a great YouTube video.
Oh, thanks. Well, The thing that gets me most about Balwearie Castle is it's totally unmaintained. Now, it's the National Trust for Scotland don't have it on their books. It's an outrage. Do you know that this alchemist and mage who trained in Toledo is probably the father of Scots whiskey. The very first Scots whiskey dram ever distilled was probably using the knowledge that he gained from distilling spirits at Toledo in Spain. So he was the father, potentially he was the father of Scottish whiskey as well. And this is a quite dilapidated, decrepit tower. Now, stories of Michael Scott, the mage, the one that really strikes me is the fact that the Scottish King Alexander III told him that too many Scottish ships were being set on by pirates. So could you go to the King of France and tell him stop doing that? So basically, Scott was supposed to have summoned up his black demonic steed and ridden off through the air and arriving in Paris the next day, and goes into the court of the King of France in his palace and says, listen, pal, or he doesn't say that, he's like, your noble majesty, etc., etc., my steed is going to hit the floor 3 times with its hoof. If you don't stop pirating Scottish ships, the first hoof strike, all the bells and church bells of Paris will toll, and the second hoof strike, the towers of this palace will come crumbling down, and then the third hoof strike, Paris itself is going to fall. So the king, being very French, the French are very defiant, you know. The French said, "Mais non." And so basically, the horse hit the floor and all the bells rang. And the king said, c'est la vie, or whatever it was he said. No, still no chance, Scotsman. And then so the next up, the stallion hit the floor again and the palace started caving in. So the king decided, well, I better agree to his terms. And so, and that's how Michael Scott, the magician, was made a knight. He was made a knight of the realm by Alexander III for his magical deeds and services to Scotland.
Very intriguing account there. Now, I'd like to mention to our listeners, Andrew, that you'll be a speaker at the Scottish UFO and Paranormal Conference 2017, to be held Saturday, July 8th at the Falkirk Town Hall. And Andrew, I want to thank you again for a very informative and engaging discussion tonight. I'm hoping that we can interview you when your latest book is published this year.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, hopefully in autumn, going on maybe winter, maybe about October, November, I suspect.
Excellent. And listeners, thanks for joining us this evening with our guest, Andrew Hennessy. We hope that you have an excellent weekend, and don't forget to listen to the two wonderful programs following on KGRA Digital Broadcasting, KGRARadio.com. Immediately following is Truth Theorem Radio Unleashed, and then Jill Hansen's Q Science Project. Thank you again. Thank you so much again, Andrew.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Fascinating discussion. Good night, everyone.